Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support local landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for July 21st, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, China's official newspaper says the PRC has suspended operations of an Aurora, Illinois company over sales of outdated meat products. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on an improving outlook for pork producers, and the folk from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago will be by with the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter September wheat settled at 6.28, down 5 3/4. Soft December wheat settled at 5.54 1/4, down 2. September corn settled at 3.64, down 7 1/4. December 3.72, down 6 1/2. March at 3.83 3/4, down 6 3/4. July 3.99 3/4, down 6 3/4. August soybeans settled at 11.75 3/4, down 1. September 10.91 1/2, down 12 3/4. November 10.71 1/2, down 13 3/4. Go out to May of 15, 10.95 1/4, down 14. August soybean meal settled at 380.70, up 40 cents. August soybean oil settled at 36.14, down 43. August live cattle settled at 153.10, up 147 1/2. August feeder cattle settled at 213.15, up 150. And August lean hogs settled at 124.97 1/2, and they were down 210. And those are today's settlements from Chicago. Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that the theme to the two-week outlook has not changed since late last week. Drying is still expected in a large part of the Midwest, but subsoil moisture should support the needs of crops, and most crops should continue to develop favorably. Some stress to crops may occur, especially in parts of the western corn belt where rain will be lightest, temperatures will be warmest, and soil moisture is lowest. Stress to crops should not become serious through the next 2 weeks, as some timely rain is expected and subsoil moisture should be high enough to prevent excessive dryness from evolving. The areas most likely to see crop stress will extend from eastern Kansas into Missouri, southeastern Nebraska, and southwestern Iowa. Soil moisture is higher elsewhere in the western Corn Belt, and timely rain will improve soil moisture in the far northwestern Corn Belt. As long as timely rain occurs in August, production potentials will remain high. Corn pollination should occur favorably in much of the Midwest through the next 2 weeks. The eastern Corn Belt should see the best conditions for pollination, as where 2 rounds of nearly ideal widespread rain will occur by this weekend, with showers continuing in a large part of the region early next week. Nearly all of the western Corn Belt will receive timely rain Thursday into Saturday as well. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Pete.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, it was quite the marketing day, and for a while there, futures seemed to be in a free fall.
Yeah, they were, and then they bounced back up, and then they went back down, and corn closed close to its low. Beans were six off their low. They tried to make a new low, couldn't do it. Corn did make a new low.
So it was very much a market that fell for a while, and then it chipped at it and chipped at it and chipped at it. It seemed like after the opening that it really was a market that was hard to get through. It actually was a market that was, after it free-falled a while, it just didn't want to go any lower.
Yeah, it didn't. And actually, on the sales of old crop beans to China, we actually had beans old crop up 18 off their high, off their low. And then they went right back down to close about in the middle, 9 off their low and 9 off their high.
So what does this mean and bode for the market going forward on the balance of the week?
Well, we look at, unless we can bounce due to some odd reason tonight, we look for continued downward movement towards the 350 on Dease corn, and then after that, 330 and 310 on beans the same way, down to 1016 and then 980-something on new crop beans, and just nothing there to hold it up. Continued good weather in the U.S., continued good weather across Europe, the Ukraine, Russia, China. Australia had a good crop. South America had a good crop. So all looking at the world having more grain than needed and pushing prices lower.
So what will stop the free fall, in your opinion? What do we need to see?
We need to see harvest of less than expected, which is a long time away.
So are traders then of a mindset, in your mind, that they're already over 14 billion bushels?
I think, yes. I think the trade thinks it's over 14 billion.
And how big of a soybean crop do you think?
They're looking at close to 4 billion there, I think, just due to the good weather forecast.
So
500 million more carry out on beans, over 500 possible, and corn over 2 billion carry out.
What's a trader to do then with these kind of numbers?
Sell bounces, buy puts on bounces.
Is that a very expensive proposition now, or is it reasonable given where the futures might be going?
You can buy a 370 put on corn for 18 to 19 cents. If they go 50 lower, that's a pretty good return. Beans, we've got people with $12 puts on. They're now rolling those out and taking a big amount and buying 11 or 1080 puts. And you can do a 1080 put, I think, for around 50 cents.
What is wheat's role in all of this?
Wheat is back and forth. You got to remember, we made on the last date, what was it, July 11th, the report date, we had a low at 525. We zoomed 40 up above that. Today we went back under the 525, but we closed at 530. So wheat isn't the downside leader now. It should be close to a low while we get almost finished with harvesting wheat.
We did make some positive gains in next July's wheat contract.
Yes, we did.
So does that suggest to you that we are close to finding that low?
Well, we're getting 80% harvested on wheat. The rest of the world has plenty of it, but generally after we get this far wheat harvested, we tend to turn around and go up towards December until we find out what the rest of the world's planting in the other hemisphere.
And then over on the livestock side, live cattle, feeder cattle up strongly again today.
Cattle and feeder cattle up, hogs the opposite down, and that's kind of what we're looking at there. Right now, just on based on what's out there and what we need and what we're using.
Do you think that live and feeder cattle are approaching a top?
No, I think we saw the top and backed off, and now we're trying to make a new top.
So you think a new top in the marketplace for? Well,
feeders hit 220, went back to 208. They're 213, 214 in the Octobers, and I think they're going to try that one again.
And then in the lean hog contract, August 124.97 half was down to 10 today.
Right. Go back under 120.
You think back under 120?
Right, and there will be lots of buyers there.
What else are we looking at in the marketplace?
Just good weather, negative feelings about the crop size being huge and the price going lower.
How might some additional developments in the Ukraine play out in the marketplace?
Right now, the Ukraine mess hasn't affected anybody. They're still shipping on schedule. Who knows what that would bring, but if they stop shipping on schedule, that would make the market tighter because they ship a lot of wheat and some corn, and that would make things bounce a little, just like the day the thing was shot down. We had beans at 11.18. Here they are 47 lower 2 days later on the markets, and corn was up to 95 and three quarters that day. We're back at 70, 72.
Anything else before we let you go today?
Sell bounces.
Sell bounces. Thank you, Pete.
Yeah.
That's Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In agricultural news, McDonald's and KFC in China say they have stopped using meat from a supplier in Shanghai, while authorities investigate a report it sold expired beef and chicken. China's news agency today says that government officials suspended the operations of Shanghai Husai, owned by Aurora, Illinois-based OSI Group, after local media reported it was selling meat products beyond their shelf life to McDonald's, KFC, and Pizza Hut. A representative for OSI Group confirmed that the company is under investigation and declined to comment further. Food safety is a concern in China, where foodborne illness and food adulteration are common occurrences. McDonald's has more than 2,000 outlets in China. Republican members of the House Ways and Means Committee are threatening to withhold support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Pact unless Congress first passes fast-track trade promotion authority for the president. In a letter to U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman, the GOP panel members say Congress would not approve the TPP that currently is being negotiated among the 12 Pacific Rim nations if TPA legislation did not meet lawmakers' goals. The letter is important because the Ways and Means Committee has jurisdiction over the nation's trade policies, and Republicans control the House and the committee. All 23 Republican members signed the letter. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack visited drought-stricken homeowners on Friday in Central California, saying drought and climate change would require major investment to secure future water supplies. A drought monitor sponsored by the federal government says 81% of California is experiencing major agricultural losses and widespread water shortages or restrictions. All but one of California's 58 counties are now federally designated disaster areas because of the drought. Conservation groups are mounting a campaign in defense of EPA's proposed Waters of the U.S. rule. Hunting, fishing, and conservation organizations are urging Congress not to interfere with the public comment process. Agriculture groups have attacked the proposed Clean Water Rule, claiming it will extend EPA's authority over water in ditches and other bodies of water on farmland, and the rule will be open to inconsistent enforcement. Among the groups fighting the rule is the American Farm Bureau Federation, which has launched the Ditch the Rule campaign aimed at rallying farmers to speak out against the rule. The Natural Resources Defense Council last week invited the Farm Bureau to participate in a debate on the rule, but the Farm Bureau declined. deliveries of past due rail cars are still lagging in parts of the U.S. and Canada. Canadian Pacific Railway says it has cumulative open requests car orders of 24,280 in North Dakota and 7,888 in Minnesota, and is 10 weeks behind. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Outlook for pork producers is brighter than many had expected, though there are still plenty of problems to face. Todd Gleason has more with Purdue Extension ag economist Chris Hurt.
Pork producers might want to say thank you for the recent USDA reports that have sharply brightened their profit outlook, thanks Chris Hurt. The first of those was the June 27th Hogs and Pigs report, indicating that breeding herd expansion had not yet started and that baby pig death losses from PED virus continued to be high last spring, says the Purdue Extension ag economist. The second beneficial number came in the June 30th grain stocks report and another in the acreage report. Both were contributors to rapidly falling corn and soybean prices and bean meal prices. It means a continued trend of profitability for the hog producer.
We've seen profitability in the hog business since really last fall when corn prices finally came down. And of course, lower feed price makes it more profitable for the animal industries, including hogs.
Prior to the June hog inventory report, there was an expectation that the nation's breeding herd was growing larger, with spring farrowing intentions up 2%. However, the report showed it down fractionally, and actual spring farrowings were down modestly. And the PED virus apparently continued to inflict higher death losses, too, that in the spring. While USDA does not specifically ask producers to report death losses from PEDV, they do report the number of pigs per litter. Comparing the reported number of pigs per litter this year to the five-year trend provides a proxy of how PEDV has affected baby pig survival.
My impression had been that we could have dropped, as we got into the warmer weather in May, maybe down to 2%. So I think this tells us that PED certainly is still around, but is having some difficulty for the industry in terms of losses. And I think what that tells us is that we're going to continue to see death loss from PED into the summer, not as large, but those certainly could be 2, 3, 4% going right through the summer.
Again, Purdue ag economist Chris Hurt's reading of the USDA numbers shows baby pig death losses to PEDV began to show up in the national data last October. The rate was 2%. This expanded to 3% in November, 6% in December, and then peaked near 8% death losses in the coldest weather months of January, February, and March. Losses appeared to be moderating somewhat with warmer weather, but were still 7% in April and 5% in May. The death losses from PEDV, he thinks, will likely to continue trending lower this summer, but current information suggests that the disease is far from controlled. So the number of hogs coming to the market this fall and winter will be smaller than had been expected due to smaller spring farrowings and higher than expected PEDV death losses. It all, frankly, added up to record profits for the producer in the second quarter of this year, near $70 per head. Continued record hog prices and now lower feed prices mean that record will fall this summer, as third quarter profits are expected to be over $100 per head. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support local landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Carolyn White of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Carolyn.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, here we are with the free fall of the market. And corn went down so easy today. It gapped yesterday overnight, and it made new lows for its move. What is your feeling about how the corn market reacted today?
Ugly. Another red day on the screen today. You know, last week I was hoping maybe we had found some bottoms. Just short term, I guess I am feeling like we're going to see markets slide even further as good as our crops look and as good as the weather has been. But maybe, you know, just for a short term, we might take a breather here, but was not the case today.
What is the condition of do you feel of the corn crop in and around where you're located? You're there in Champaign County, and what are farmers saying about what they think their yield potential is?
If I had to rate Champaign County, I'd say corn was a 10 out of 10, and beans right now maybe an 8. I know beans don't like the wet feet that they've had here, but I mean, things look good, and I guess we just need some good rains here to finish this crop out.
And producers, what are they saying about their yield potential?
They're good, probably maybe average to above average, depending on who you speak with.
So are producers then not as sold up as they thought they would be because the yields are going to be better than they anticipated?
Regardless of what they think their yields have been, producers are just there are some that have not sold a bushel one. But yes, I think that's the case. If you thought you were maybe 40-50% priced, you weren't the way the crop looks today.
So if the phone rings and the producer says, "I'm not sold bushel one," what are you saying to him?
I'm sorry. Darn it. Golly, that's a tough one, you know, because guys, now we were kind of busy today with some guys liquidating old crop corn, a few new crop sales, but it's tough for these guys to sell here.
So what are you anticipating coming into the elevator come fall? I would anticipate there would be a lot of on-farm storage if producers have the capacity.
Yeah, they do, but it's still going to be extremely busy this fall with the way the crops look.
So, what's basis role in all this? Is there any potential for any kind of a some sort of a basis improvement strengthening between now and harvest?
Well, I guess there's always that chance, but I'm in the camp that our new crop basis just got 2 cents worse from last Friday, and we're 27 under on corn. I think that could even get wider. Soybeans were 20 under the nove on beans. Even for guys that don't have anything sold, I'd suggest they at least get some basis locked in, because I do think the fall we'll see wider basis levels.
You have any idea of how wide?
No. Maybe a nickel more, dime, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. What about your prices today, then?
Cash corn today here for July and August delivered into the Andersons, $3.63. New crop corn, $3.45. January, $3.69. March, $3.74. And fall of 15, $3.82. For soybeans, we are $12.41 on cash. August beans, $10.71. Okay. New crop at $10.51. Jan, $10.65. Okay.
Thank you very much, Carolyn.
All right, you bet.
That's Carolyn White of the Andersons, and she is in Champaign, Illinois. It's Junk Food Day. What constitutes junk food is often in the eye of the beholder. What constitutes unhealthy food includes elements of cultural influences, class snobbery, and moral judgment, and, of course, quantitative measurements such as calories. On this day in agricultural history in 1694, George Brandt was born. Brandt, a Swedish chemist, discovered cobalt, which is added to steel to make it harder and have a higher melting point. Cobalt is also an essential part of vitamin B12. In 1873, it rained ants in Nancy, France. In 1917, the U.S. Senate voted on a food bill that, among other things, fixed the minimum price for wheat of $1.50 a bushel. In 1983, a new low record temperature was recorded at Vostok Station, Antarctica, minus 128.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And in 2006, the U.S. Senate voted after 2 days of emotional debate to expand federal funding of embryonic stem cell research, sending the measure to President George Bush for a promised veto. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is Mark Russo of Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hi, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, the weather, it's like rinse and repeat.
Kind of a little bit of a roller coaster ride we're on here following last week's cooler weather. Now we're beginning to heat up, and that will be felt more so into Tuesday and the start of Wednesday here in Illinois, let alone the eastern part of the Midwest. But then that will be followed up by another round of unseasonably cool air that will prevail through the balance of the week. And then that will continue into next week as well. So as a result, we really don't see any kind of extreme heat here developing across Illinois, let alone the entire Corn Belt. While we do have a few hot days right now, they are short in duration, and thus we do not see any threat to pollinating corn as we go through the end of the month, and even for that matter, any late pollinating corn into the early part of August.
I suppose if there were any areas of stress, this would be nitpicking a little bit, maybe eastern Kansas and Missouri, southeastern Nebraska, southwestern Iowa. That's just based on the idea that maybe subsoil moisture is just a little less there.
Yeah, exactly. You can really kind of take it with a fine-tooth comb here, and with overall, that would be the area where you could see a little more crop stress versus the rest of the Corn Belt. But that area prior to the last few weeks actually did receive more significant precipitation and is markedly better compared with several months ago, and thus has good subsoil moisture levels in portions of that. So, yeah, and something to keep an eye on. But overall here, even there, with the fact that the duration of this heat is very short-lived, and that is the main variable here as far as corn pollination, the fact that it's short in duration, it should not result in significant stress or any kind of significant reduction in yield potential.
There was some talk last week about the potential for a higher pressure ridge to develop. Why did it not, and what is the potential of higher pressure ridge between now and into the harvest, if you can go that far out?
Yeah, well, with our ridge, we're seeing a ridge actually slip into the Midwest here a little bit, as far as the plains is seeing it a little bit more with this heat, and that's actually, that is associated with the ridge. However, the ridge, again, will be very short in duration over the middle of the country, and will be back out over the Rockies coming up by later on Wednesday into Thursday, and it looks to stay parked out there.
Thank you very much, Mark. That's Mark Russo of Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.